From Caravaggio's time to John Cheever's, our own, the world changed immeasurably, but not when it comes to public acceptance of homosexuality. Being gay made Caravaggio fear for his life. 400 years later, John Cheever kept his bisexuality hidden from his family and his public. No small matter, given his literary celebrity. Fans would try all sorts of tricks to get close to their favorite writer. John's son Ben Cheever, a successful novelist in his own right, remembers what it was like.
People would give me manuscripts to look at, kind of hoping I'd pass them on to him. Uh-huh. Or they'd tell me what they thought of a book of his when they didn't really want to tell him. And sometimes they'd call me John when my name is Ben and they don't really sound alike.
Yeah.
And that, I didn't like that at all and had a lot of trouble with that. Now that I do write, and I've written a couple of books kind of about, you know, the first book is really about, to a large extent, about me and him. If they're really interested in my relationship with my father and my best take on what he was like and my blame and his blame and whatever went right or wrong in that relationship, they can read that book. If they're not really interested, that's okay too. But I find, I don't know if you hear this from other writers, that if I write a book about something, I can move on to the next thing.
Did it help? I know you edited his letters, I assume, actually, although I don't know this, after his death.
Well, that was an enormously useful exercise for me. And to work on his journals, to see who he was. In the book of letters, I'd type out, and I would type out his letter, and then I would type out whatever framing material I thought would be useful to the reader. And then I would type out his letter, and then I thought to myself, this is him, and this is me, this is him, and this is me. We're different. We're both useful,
yeah.
But we're different. And that was really, in a way, you know, my bar mitzvah to do that book.
It really must have been like putting it behind you, finally. I mean, incorporating it, including it, and not having to confront it anymore.
That's right. It became his professional life, and my professional life became allies rather than enemies, which they had seemed.
Just out of curiosity, how did he deal with fame?
Well, he's a complicated character, and I recommend highly the book of letters and his journals. And of course, you have to read the stories, because if you don't read the stories, you don't know why he's worth studying. But he was a very disguised person in some ways, very immediate, but also very disguised. He was secretly a bisexual, and in fact, he was homophobic, or seemed homophobic. Well, he was homophobic. He didn't like people who were, you know, too swishy or too effeminate. So I think that the fact that he was one person and acting sometimes as another caused a division in his life that we don't necessarily have. Not everybody has. I think a lot of performers have it. And I think he was, I don't just think, I know that at the last 5 years of his life, he was quite happy. He was surprised by his success, pleased by it, gratified by it. And it was at that point that he began to come to terms, both privately and publicly, with his sexual desires.
This must have all been very important for you, not necessarily his dealing with his sexuality, but looking at the way in which he finally came to terms with his life. Did it give you some guidelines for dealing with your own concerns?
Well, I was confused at first, because he had one of the, you know, I used to say, when I was even 30 years old, I remember talking to a friend and saying, I don't know how to build a fire. And I've realized one of my father's two greatest fears. One was that I wouldn't be able to build a fire, and the other was that I'd be homosexual. I thought that was a funny joke, and clearly he wasn't homosexual. When it turned out that he was bisexual, I was a little bewildered and thought maybe I'm bisexual. Maybe I just was afraid to try it out. And so I had to wait and see, you know, what was going to come forward. In many ways, he was an inspiration. Not only did he write beautifully, but he was a very immediate person. He was a good person to be in a room with. And I admire that and have tried, I think, to be that same kind of person.
Yeah. Well, certainly you have taken to the writing and you've incorporated some of his fun with the world. And this latest book, Famous After Death, fame seems not to frighten you very much anymore.
Well, I'm not that. For one thing, I'm not that famous. But I think frame is a frightening thing because really because of my wife, who's a film critic for the New York Times and knows a lot of very accomplished people. We know some people who are quite famous. And I think it's not an easy thing to deal with. You know, it means that people don't address you a lot. They address your reputation. You know, I can go hang around at a bus stop or, you know, go to Grand Central or meet someone at a party and talk to them just as if I were a regular person, which is, I think, the easier way to do it.
And they cannot.
And that's right, they cannot. Yeah. Until they get through it, they get to know someone well enough, they come out the other end. Yeah. But it's something they have to go through.
So in writing Famous After Death, what was the most fun, having the opportunity to kind of lampoon fame and all of the people who do stupid things in the world?
Well, I'm. Let's not forget for a moment that I'm one of the people who do stupid things in this world. That's why I'm so familiar with it. But it's fun to write a book because you get to live in a world of your own imagining, and if you can make that world humorous, then that's a good thing to do, I think. Not a bad way to spend a day.
Ben Cheever has written for The New York Times, The Nation, and The New Yorker. His most recent novel is Famous After Death.